On this week's episode of the Superhero Show Show, we'll find out if Harry can save the planet he once tried to destroy on the season finale of Resident Alien, if Mark can destroy the portal man he once tried to save on the season finale of Invincible, and if Morbin Time turned out to be 1995 and not 2022. All of that and more on an all-new episode of the Superhero Show Show. What's up, nerds? Welcome to the Superhero Show Show, the only podcast that covers every live-action TV show based on a comic book, as well as some of the animated ones. My name is Cassie, and I will be your host for this episode. With me, as always, is my best friend, Ryan.
Hold on, Cassie. Sorry, I am busy right now. I am watching women's basketball, college basketball right now, so if you'll excuse me. That game is over. Sorry, I was just watching my favorite sport. Women's college basketball.
Wow, Ryan. You are, again and again, everyone, like, we get emails. It's like, Ryan's such a stand-up guy. Ryan's really, like, an ally. Ryan gets it. And, like, time and time again, you just show, like, hell yeah, you're watching. You care about the women's tournament. Yeah.
Cassie, did you know that as of this recording, the night before this recording's game, in the March Madness of Women, which I think they call Marchette Madnessina.
Uh-huh.
That game got almost 13 million viewers, which is more than all but one NBA playoff game from last season.
No way.
And as a woman, you signed a contract, so you watched every women's college basketball game in the tournament, yes?
Yeah, I made a blood oath, actually. And it's like, even if I'm trying to do something else, it kind of just like appears up on a screen somewhere. And it's like, watch this now.
So if you try to like move the TV away from your eyes, at least one eye will just follow it all the way around.
Yeah. And that's how I got this lazy eye.
Okay, so then I can obviously ask, and this is, I'm not being like a gatekeeper here. I'm not being like a douchebag in a record store or a comic book store.
Ryan would never do that. Not this guy.
But go ahead and name me every team and then the starters for every team of all 64 teams in the women's college basketball Marchette Madnessina bracket.
Yeah, I would love to do that. It's just like, that's not really what this show is. You know, it's a superhero show. It's not the Supergirls doing super dunks, you know, show.
Not doing dunks, but okay, so
Ryan, Ryan, you're one of the good guys.
Okay, I forgot. I'm sorry. Somebody ran out, just slapped me, and then ran away. I think it was Will Smith. Are we still talking about that?
That's still relevant, yeah.
Okay, so we'll start another podcast
called
Ryan and Cassie Talk About the 2024 NCAA Women's College Basketball Tournament, because podcast titles, they have to be very, very like on the nose this day and age. And we will discuss. Well, we're not even going to discuss. We're going to sit there as you, with no computer, no internet, name all 64 teams in the bracket and all five of the starters of each of the teams.
Yep. And that's going to be a great podcast over there for the people to find.
And what happens, again, real quick, if you don't follow through on a blood oath? What is the rule there?
You know, it gets pretty dark. I got to give away like a firstborn, an arm, my soul. It gets pretty dark, but I would never do that because I love the basketball and I love women. Let's go, women. But Ryan, as much as I would love to like say, like, let's spend this whole hour that we have talking about women, because again, they deserve it. Let's go.
Both of our t-shirts right now just say, let's go, women.
Let's go, women. We got this. But we do have to talk about comic book TV shows again, because Superhero Show, and I have another blood oath over here, and I gotta talk about comic book ones over here. A lot of
your agent called me tonight, by the way, said no more blood oaths. Yeah. Why is he not calling you? I don't know, but no more, Cassie. That is it.
Well, I listed you as the emergency contact and like kind of like in charge of all my needs and stuff. You haven't filled any of my prescriptions with my doctor or my pharmacy, so like you need to get on that too.
Most of these prescriptions just say add more blood to Cassie because she's spilling blood for blood oaths everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, Ryan. And this is on you is what we've discovered.
No. I, no. This is, okay, I'm the emergency contact for hundreds of people, okay? I hand out my card. If you're in need of an emergency contact, write this name down. But, like, I didn't agree to do anything. You're just writing my name down. So, like, that's there's no responsibility on my part.
No, that doesn't seem right. If you're, like, I'm your emergency contact, like, you, that's, like, kind of like an oath in itself. It's, like, it's not, there's no blood, but there is an oath of, like, I got your back, whatever you need.
Cassie, my emergency contact on my current hospital paperwork, Dr. Pages, is, it says Princess Jones. Can you tell the audience who Princess Jones is?
That is your beautiful puppers.
Yeah, what is she going to do if I make too many blood oaths?
She's just going
to get jealous.
She is. She absolutely is. But Ryan, comic books, we're talking about them.
Okay,
and we got a,
I'm ready. I'm ready.
We got a bunch to talk about tonight. Later up, we're going to be talking about Invincible and X-Men 97. But before that, let's dive into the season 3 finale of Resident Alien. On the season 3 finale of Resident Alien, Harry, Asta, Darcy, and Handsome Joseph have infiltrated the Greys' spaceship and are trying to stop the Greys from making the Earth inhabitable and also trying to blow up their ship. After getting captured, they are not able to destroy their ship, which is probably for the best because their ship is the moon, but they do manage to stop the Greys' plan and escape with some extra cargo after Darcy saves Kate's baby and brings her back to Earth. All seems to be going well until we find out that the Harry who went back to Earth was not the real Harry. Taste buds, I ask you, did this season finale succeed in tying up all the plots while also be heartwarming and Resident Alien at the same time?
Yes. Next show, let's get to the pull list.
Let's do it.
Cyber Sprout. Cassie, you have a website you wanted to talk about? No, there were some moments in this episode where I did think, because as I've been talking about for the last couple of weeks, my wife discovered the show on Netflix called Resident Alien, where I was sort of watching it through her eyes, and there's some moments in here that are corny if you watch this movie or episode in a vacuum, but since we don't, they all hit so hard. Like, they all did a really good job, where Darcy has a ton. Darcy, both the character in the world of the show and the character that the writers created, does a lot of confusing, dumb things.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't necessarily appreciate the decisions that the writers make for her all the time, but they do always get her to land in the right spots. There's a couple times where I was a little bit nervous about the decisions Darcy might make, but we can get to that later. But all of the moments that Darcy's in, because she's such a fuck up, she gets to climb up and succeed. And everybody has everybody that is important has something to do here, whether it's save a baby, save the planet, or just fucking kick that poop off the walking trail into the woods where nobody sees it. Everyone has a goal, and they are all done wonderfully.
They're all equally important, too, it should be noted. These are all on the same level. We will get back to the poop because magical moment. But let's focus on Darcy for a little bit. I think the very first episode when we started talking about this season, we mentioned specifically, like, I was like, do you think they're going back on Darcy? Because we started to make progress on Darcy's character and we were excited. And then it seemed like they quickly backtracked on her. And I was like, do you think they'll remedy this? And I should have never doubted them. I'm so happy that they gave her, like, this whole thing. The episode starts with her, like, she stole the bomb and takes it to the Grays' base so she can get on the ship and blow it up. Like, she was going to sacrifice herself and was like, this is my purpose.
Much like our favorite actor of all time, Randy Quaid, in the film Independence Day.
Much like. And she's like, you know, this is my purpose. But she's still being very Darcy about it. She's still making little videos and is like, I deserve a statue. This is how you spell my name. Great. Great, Darcy. But then she's not, like, the plan doesn't go well. She gets captured. The bomb gets taken. But she still does get to be a savior in, like, a way more meaningful way by saving Kate's baby.
In a way, definitely a more personal way. For sure. And then, like, to the characters and us and the audience, I think that my issue was that with Darcy, like, we know that Asta and Darcy's relationship is the strongest of the show. And I know that you're going to say Mayor Ben and his wife is the strongest, but that's actually not true.
Yeah, always jumping for that.
And this show, this episode, and a couple of previous episodes cover the fact, like, they have arguments where they're foils to each other and sort of explain in a sometimes mostly organic way what their differences are. and Asta is the grounded, fastidious nerd, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Darcy is the wild card. And Asta says in this episode, sometimes making me the way to make me feel better, the way to think about myself is to think about other people and do things for other people, which is a little bit like, all right, Asta, settle down. Like, this is shit that boomers write on Facebook about themselves. But I do think it gets to the core of Asta. My problem with Darcy is that, like I was talking about before with the crazy things she does, as a wild card, taking a bomb to sacrifice yourself for the planet is a little bit too wild card. Just because you saw the love of your life with another woman and he's happy and that makes you happy and you realize what love is, you drive a bomb to the Greys, all of the handsome, handsome Greys. Just they push that pedal a little too hard with Darcy.
She was in a deep spiral from that. You've ever been in a deep spiral after seeing an ex? Sometimes it results in you taking a bomb somewhere. It happens, Ryan. Don't worry about it.
Number one, people take bombs places. Number two, do not worry about it.
Don't worry about it. Things happen. So the moment when Asta's saying, like, you know, basically I get joy from, like, helping others. And, like, so the moment when they were, like, she was, like, the first time I met you, you jumped on my back and said, like, run or whatever. And I just kept doing it because of your laugh. I thought that was precious. Were you, like, shove it?
No. That right there, that's why we watch TV. That's a golden moment. I'm not being an asshole right now. I'm being genuine. Cassie, that's a good moment.
This is good guy Ryan. This is two women supporting women. You fucking loved this moment.
I'm sorry I can't help but be an ally. I'm sorry that, like, it just oozes out of me.
Yeah, just one of the good ones. And then we have Harry, who is, he's full mission mode, but he's also dad mode with his son, Noah's kid. What's the kid's name?
Well, right now it's Bridget, but he's a son, and he's trying to figure out who he looks like, or what he looks like, or his whole thing. A parent that we should all look up to in this one way. Not in a lot of the ways that Harry does parenting, like tasing their kid until they explode all over the place, but in this one way of acceptance and giving them time, perfect.
But Ryan, what if your kid is so good at murder and you send it first into battle against, like, five aliens? Good dad or bad dad? But what? Again, the kid is good at murder.
Do I have a lot of enemies? Of course I do. And I'm just being supportive of what they want to do. I'm not seeking them. Like, I'm not sicking them. What's that word? Like, you know, that you say to dogs, sick them. I'm not doing that with my kid. I'm just saying, you find yourself, and if you find yourself in a group of my enemies, tear them apart, and then I'll be off to the side going, oh my God. Oh, wow, you're doing it. You're doing it, kid.
I understand that this is a sci-fi show and we just don't have the budget for it, but also there's probably no good way to fully do that scene.
I mean, if we did, it would be like Invincible, which you complained about last week, of just being overly gory. Like, that was probably disgusting what Bridget did to those dudes.
Probably nasty. We did get, like, I felt like this one, because it is the finale and we had everything leading up to it, like, this was our more action-packed one. There was a lot of fights and stuff, a lot of things happening on the ship. How'd you feel about the action portion of this one?
It was okay. There was nothing like the Harry versus everyone that we got last time, but I think that the goal for a finale like this is less about the choreographed action and more about the pacing of the storylines, right? Like, how do we edit it in such a way that we build correctly with seemingly normal scenes, and then we get to a point where it's basically a 30-minute montage. And it's not a music montage. We can still hear dialogue, but it goes boom, boom, boom to every plot line back and forth. And then in this one, like, we're like, plotline A, B, C, A, B, C, and then B and A combine, and then it's A and B and C. You know, that's the goal. So that's the choreography that I really appreciate about an episode like this.
Beautiful, Ryan. Look at, you're so smart. You're so good at this.
You can't ask me questions, and then when I answer them, you make fun of me. Okay?
No, I was honestly, like, impressed, and I just didn't have anything to add to it. So, you know, I just got to give you your props. I give props to you for putting words together, also supporting women. But there is... Now I think that we've talked about the action, we clearly have to go to the poop scene, which happens. We have this is with the sheriff and the deputy. They're out in the woods trying to find an alien, maybe?
Yeah, they're the most lost in this episode. Yeah. Well, I guess Terry O'Quinn, who plays Peter, who plays the guy who is covered in cybernetic Terminator stuff.
Yes.
He's the most lost because he played Locke in the show Lost. But other than that, these two are the most lost. And
you're proud of yourself.
They're just, see, every response is either I'm the greatest of all time or I'm a piece of shit. That's all you know.
It's two extremes.
They're literally like with out in the daytime with flashlights being like, aliens over here? Nope. Aliens over here? Nope. And the
walking
only thing.
On a hiking trail.
Yeah. On a trail.
Like, not in the woods.
People have hiked every day, all day. If they live anywhere like where I live, people are like, let's go on a fucking hike, man. It'll be fucking rad. We'll get water bottles. Anyway, hikers, get the fuck out of here. And the only thing for drama's sake that could happen is Sheriff Mike's ex-girlfriend comes back. That's like his big plot line of the thing. I think it should have been Judy Pooper. I like them together. But the show prefers this detective, Lena Torres, who shows up there. She's been tracking Mike the entire time, Cassie. Is that weird? Because I'm also tracking a mic right now.
It's definitely, I mean, it's a little weird, but when you love somebody, when you love a mic that much, you gotta let it play.
And if they don't love you back and you see them with their current girlfriend or boyfriend, just get a bomb. And number two, don't worry about it.
If anybody should take away anything, we can't say this. We can't do this.
No. Producer Dave, edit.
Edit. There is, so they reconnect. They, like, mend things over so quickly, so easily. But, you know, when you love somebody, you love somebody. And during this moment when they're, like, getting back together, perfect resident alien, the deputy comes up because she has taken Cletus, the little precious dog who the sheriff loves so much. To give him some space, and then the dog took a big old poopers. She needs a bag, and he's like, just get it. Just kick it out of the way. So while they're professing their love to each other, we do have the deputy kicking shit around. So
she's a shit kicker. Cassie, you and I are both dog owners. One of us is a dog lover. But even if you don't have a dog or have never had a dog, I feel like, and this is happening, by the way, when the detective and the sheriff are on the sides of the screen, reconfirming their love to each other. Deputy Liv is in the background kicking the shit.
In the middle.
directly in between them. And even if you've never had a dog, you still know that perfect leg swing that where you kick the shit. Like, so it does move. It does fly somewhere else, but you don't get it all over your shoe. You know, like there's a perfect action
swoop.
Hero. Yeah, there's a swoop to it where you have to use physics where your foot doesn't touch long enough for the brown to get all over it, but it does fly. It's hard, but it's possible.
It's so important. And she tried for the swoop, and the swoop was a little bit off. It did not go her way. And then this equally important moment, I guess the other plot line we have here, is we do have the mayor, Kate, and the mayor. He will always be the mayor to me.
Sure.
They are, you know, dealing with the fact that they both know they've been getting abducted. He gets the chip removed, and she decides to keep hers because that's the only way to get back to her baby. In punch number one, just in this conversation, I was like, oof. And then we see her on the ship trying to save her baby with Darcy and getting, like, taken away, essentially. Another big old punch. Just a lot of punches happening with the storyline constantly.
Yeah, Kate and her baby are going to be probably ultimately the most memorable thing about this third season. And such, if you like, I'm not gendering, I'm just saying like, no, I am. Moms and dads, and the difference is dads are like, oh, get this chip out of me immediately. In fact, take the one off my shoulder while you're at it. They'll make some joke like that. and moms will be like, no, I will leave the alien technology inside of me because that's the only connection to my baby. And I will go get abducted, and I will fight the aliens because they have my baby girl. And dads are like, what? I would have done that, but I'm already playing Call of Duty. Goodbye.
Oh, I mean, I guess both of us don't need to be doing it. If you're already handling that, I'll handle the Call of Duty. You handle fighting aliens and connecting to our daughter.
No, it's just that I don't want to get in your way because it feels like a one-person job. You know,
when we go to the store, you're always yelling at me like I'm in the way. And yeah. Like, I can't do it right, so.
We're just trying to do dishes and... you know, like the sink's only big enough for one person. And so like, I always let you do it. So like to like be out of your way. So yeah, that's why I got my chip removed and you go up into space.
You go have fun. Bye. We do have a scene when she's up in space and like they're in this room full of babies, haunting, terrible. There's little screens playing from all their moms telling them just like, just phrases of like, you're so big. You look at how beautiful your eyes are, like haunting shit happening around. And then we see her just like with a little knife, like ready to fuck up these aliens. And I was like, hell yeah, let's go.
They basically walk into the baby matrix, right? Yeah. Where all of the Neos and others were plugged in. And Darcy walks in and looks at all of these babies with the TV screens and says, and I quote, this is messed up. And that's true, Darcy.
This is
what these aliens are doing. Is capital M, capital U, messed up.
Certified messed up. And they do at the end, like, we don't see them fully reconnect with the baby, but I mean, that would have been like a whole thing. So I feel like I was fine with how they did it with her, Darcy just knocking on the door. And we know that they'll have that moment or whatever.
Yeah, that's true. It would have extended the episode a little bit too long. That would have been a lot. Although I will say that based on the last five episodes, let's say, I'm starting to wonder is Meredith Gerritsen, who plays Kate, the mayor's wife, is she the best actor, period, on the show?
Absolutely.
Or is it because she's been giving the most dramatic moments? But however much time she had with Darcy bringing her baby, she would have killed it. My question to you, Cassie, is, excuse me, is that Darcy stalls a little bit before she knocks on that door.
Yeah.
And did you think, because she's Darcy, she was like, you know what? They don't remember that this is their baby. I'm just going to keep this baby for myself and raise it.
I genuinely had that fear.
God damn it, Darcy.
She turns around for a second.
Yeah,
and
she turns around.
You can't have this fucking kid, Darcy. Don't raise this kid in the bar, please.
No, I turned the well where I keep the shitty liquor into a crib, and I just put the baby in there.
She loves it. Other than that, at the very end, we get the reveal that the Harry that came back is one of these aliens that were in the cells on the ship. They're little like mantises, and they can like shapeshift and match, like take anybody's form, essentially. And it's one of them that came back to Earth, and Harry and the kid are stuck in a cage.
Yes, Bridget.
Bridget.
Which they sort of telegraphed because after a certain point, they're escaping from the moon and they're like, well, where's Bridget? And Harry's like, I don't want to talk about it. And everybody's...
they're like, I assumed little Bridget dead, R.I.P. And I feel like that's where everyone is at. They just seen some effed up shit, so we're not going to mention it. We're going to let this boy be... We're going to let it go.
Next day at the diner, they're like, are you okay with what happened to Bridget? And Harry's like, I don't want to talk about it. Weird. Like, raise an eyebrow. If Harry is making this arc into becoming a great parent, they don't just pull the plug on that like that right away. We don't have Bridget die off screen.
Yeah.
And then it turns out we find out why. It's not Harry. It's a goddamn praying mantis. Found out, told to the audience by Max, because when he looks at Harry's head, it's a mantis instead of his blue alien.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, Cassie, last week we talked about how Max leaves boogers everywhere, and
yeah,
that's how Bridget was able to turn into Max. This week we learn that in the fake Looking for Lice, Max's mom found nothing but lice. What is going on with this disgusting child? And ultimately, doesn't it come down to the parents to teach him manners and how to use a Kleenex and wash his fucking hair?
I mean, as much as these parents care about this baby who is taken from them, as they should, we know they don't care about Max, proven time and time again. So it fully makes sense that this has happened and this kid is just full of lice.
Cassie, you grew up in Riverside. Did they send a kid home when they didn't have lice? They were like, go home and you get lice. And they kept everybody else in the class?
It was like, if you don't have lice, like, you fucked up. That one stays home. Like, this is where the lice live. This, we just keep them. The environment is here. Stay away. We don't need your clean scalp over here.
Man, you really should be nicer to your hometown. That's really gross that you did that. Can we talk about one more thing real quick?
Absolutely.
I would like to know. I mentioned John Locke from Lost. He was played by Terry O'Quinn. In this episode, or in this season, he's basically been in a bed in a coma. And then he comes out in this episode as the Terminator. Straight up, he is half man, half robot. I understand that the Terminator is all robot. I do not need emails about that. Just go with me here.
Ryan, that was a good catch. God, the emails.
He has Terminator vision, which means he looks at a crowd and we can see through his vision. Couple things. One, did they tell Terry O'Quinn when they signed him to this part that eventually in 2 years you were going to have to do this? Or do they keep that as a surprise?
I'm assuming that's a full surprise because it was a lot that they threw at him and he's working with it as best as he can.
I mean, he's what, 78, 79 years old?
Yeah.
Number two, Linda Hamilton is in the show.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Cassie, here we go. Linda Hamilton plays the general on this show. She played Sarah Connor in the original two Terminator movies.
Okay.
He looks like a Terminator. All right, these next couple are not going to go great. Number three, this character's name is Peter Bock. Don't you think at some point he could have said, I'll be Bock as the Terminator?
Keep going. You're okay, on it. You're on a roll.
Number four, why didn't Harry's best friend, his nurse and best friend, kill the Terminator so she could say, hasta la vista, baby?
I wish Mike was here for you. I know he'd be so proud of you right now, and you guys would be having this magical moment. And I'm sorry that it's just me here. But,
well, I mean, you could decide. I know we don't choose our emotions, but you could decide to make me feel like it's a magical moment right now.
Yeah, I could. It just doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel genuine.
As soon as I started talking, your eyes decide that this will not be a magical moment for me.
Shut this down. I've already given you one compliment in this segment, so I simply can't do another. You must suffer. But that's all that happens. This is the end of the episode. Overall, still love this show. Still, this season did good.
Oh, this was an amazing season. I'm so glad it's on Netflix. Like, I feel bad for Sci-Fi or whatever channel it's on. I honestly don't know. But now that it's on Netflix, everyone's going to watch. I've been watching the beginning along with my wife. A couple of notes. He goes to Harry in like the sixth episode goes to a sci-fi convention.
Mm-hmm.
And they talk about how terrible the Greys are.
Yeah.
There's some alien professional and he talks about how terrible the Greys are and how fucking hot the blue avians are.
Yeah.
And that pays off 2 years later. So
I can't believe he mentions how hot the blue avians are.
Yeah. And also my wife's least favorite character by far.
Uh-huh.
You want to guess?
The mayor.
No, she hates the mayor, but like he's too much of a dud to even like hate passionately. It's Sheriff Mike. And I do sort of remember how there was a first season or so of him like doing corny dialogue, and then at some point I think they gave him the Alan Tudyk license of just be like, you know what, dude, come up with your own dialogue then, and he fucking went off. So dang. I think that eventually she will see it.
Good, because man, he holds such a special place in our hearts. It's so hard to see him as not just one of the greatest parts of this show. But yes, it is on Sci-Fi. The old ones are on Netflix. So if you haven't jumped on this yet, jump on it. It's an amazing show. That is it for Resident Alien. But Ryan, I have some time to talk about a website, and I've heard you have another great website idea.
I do have a website idea. It's called Chili's TV and Movies.
Okay.
And so basically, I'm trying to actually earn money with one of these websites just to give it to Cybersprout. I know that they're supposed to be sponsoring us, but I want to sponsor them.
That's so kind of you.
And so what we're going to do is we're going to put some money in turnaround. We're going to move some things from our accounts to offshore accounts, maybe the Cayman Islands. Mm-hmm. Interest levels are portfolios, if you think about it.
It's so true.
So what we're going to do is we're going to find opportunities for Chili's to advertise on TV and movies. There's a point in this particular episode. I can't even believe that you brought this up, but in this season finale of Resident Alien, Kate, played by Meredith Gerritsen, she says, I'm not going to stop until we get our baby back. And then if we just take a little time out and it says Chili's on the screen, and then some singers come in and they're like, my baby back, baby back, baby back. I'm not going to stop until I get my baby back, baby back, baby back, baby back, Chili. And then it just goes from there. And the actors are just like smiling and eating baby back ribs for 2 minutes. That's all I ask. 2 minutes of your life. And then Meredith Gerritsen, because she is an actress and a professional, goes right back to, no, but they stole my daughter and I want her back.
I love this. I'm very proud of you for this connection, that magical moment that we should have had earlier. Here it is now. Great job. Just one quick question for you. So, like, when Meredith, you know, getting down on baby backs, especially Chili's ones, they're so saucy, so juicy.
Are you getting paid right now?
I'm trying, dude. I'm trying to get Cyberstrat some deals. But, you know, it's just the sauce be everywhere. Like, is she taking a moment to, like, get that little wet napkin, clean up a bit, and then go back to her dramatic moment of, like, my baby is gone?
This, out of everything I just said, this is your one question?
This is my one question. What is the wet nap situation? Everything else, greenlit, love it, fucking genius. But there's this transition between rib monster to dramatic actor, and I just need to know how we're covering that.
Cassie, thank you for your question. And I will say that we will probably sign. We're in talks right now. Everybody's saying that we're in talks right now with the top wet nap company. And they will also be providing commercials in this moment.
Fucking flawless. That's what I talk about, a business mind right there.
So I'm not going to stop until I get my baby back. Baby back, baby back. Chili's, Chili's, Chili's. Now my hands are dirty. Wet nap, wet nap, wet nap. And then, no, but seriously, my daughter has been stolen by aliens. I will not stop till I get her back. A flawless dramatic scene.
Flawless.
That also makes everyone kashish.
It's truly genius. And again, we're trying to get Cybersprout. I see you've heard of them.
Oh, yeah, them.
They're my friends. I'm glad you've already heard the word about them. That's because they make great websites. And they're going to make this, again, what was that URL? Chili's?
Chili's TV and Movies.
.com.
.com.
Great.
.com.
And cybersprout.net is going to help you build that. That's because they work hand in hand with you. They also they're well-versed in digital strategy and elegant design, which is going to be crucial for this Chili's website that you have going on. They have easy-to-edit fields, custom templates, drag-and-drop tools. They're also able to handle your hosting. They also offer premium hosting that's specifically built for WordPress. You can visit cybersprout.net to get started. Cybersprout.net, your partner for a digital world. Coming up next, let's go to the pull list. Welcome to the pull list, where we cover every other show that came out this week. First up is The Walking Dead, The Ones Who Live. On the sixth episode of The Ones Who Live, Rick and Michonne successfully get into the CRM and destroy Jadis' dossier. While there, they discover the CRM's plan to abduct certain children and gas the rest of Portland. Rick and Michonne eventually take down the head person leading this, and the city then takes over the CRM. Taste Ryan, I ask you, why do you think a lot of our shows this week are dealing with abducted children?
I think it's because, of course, we have... there's like news in the newspaper this week.
There is news.
You know, and stocks are up, bonds are down.
Mm. That and Dow, that S&J, the
S&P, the salt and pepper.
They're going crazy.
It can't just be because it's such an easy go-to to make people feel things.
No, that doesn't sound right. You see, with the solar eclipse happening,
a solar eclipse of the sun. Yes, this is it. Are you going somewhere? Are you vacationing for this? I've heard that there's like hotels in Texas that are booked because they're in the direct eclipse land.
Yeah. I didn't book anywhere. I stay out. I connect with the land during this time. I'm out there, just straight on the streets. Body to ground. I don't need a hotel. That's not how I experience this. That's how I connect. Not how I connect.
Middle of the freeway.
But yeah, I'll be in Texas. Middle of the freeway. Catch me there.
Cassie, as a woman in Texas, please don't just get home safely, is all I will say.
You got it.
Don't get pregnant or anything like that. Okay.
Well, it's the solar eclipse. I can't promise anything. Who knows?
Oh, man. Is that how Jesus was born?
That's how.
Is Jesus' father a solar eclipse? I have a question for you about this show. This is The Walking Dead, The Ones Who Live.
Yeah.
The next season that comes out is The Walking Dead, Dead City. So do you like the ones where it's like you have dead and then nope, live in, after the colon? Or if you like The Walking Dead and then throw another dead after the colon?
I like
what kind
the
of Walking
dead.
Dead watcher are you?
I'm a double dead just because they really, I like the double down on it. I don't like the contradiction. I like the double down.
So if it was The Walking Dead colon, the dead are the dead who are dying until they're dead. That's your.
I would actually watch an episode.
You would actually watch that show. You know what? We didn't talk about this week or tonight because this is the big night of Resident Aliens season finale and Invincible season finale. This is also The Walking Dead, the ones who aren't dead but instead live season's finale. And
fuck, was it?
It was. We didn't watch a single one.
Shout out to this show. I'm sure it was a show if you wanted to watch it Sundays on AMC. Our next show of the week is Invincible.
Cassie, I'm a little under the weather, so if I sneeze through this, just assume what I was going to say in the intro and say it, please.
You got it.
On the season finale of Invincible, Mark and his mom are trying to get their life back together, but Angstrom Levy has some other plans. He attacks the family and throws Mark and himself through dozens of multiverses in a big fight that ends in Mark doing something he never thought he would do. Taste buds, I ask you this. Guess which multiverses he was thrown through. For every correct answer, I will donate $1 to Planned Parenthood. And for every wrong answer, I will buy you one Trump Bible in your name.
Why would you make the stakes so high? I can't even, like, my mind immediately went blank, and I was like, it's going to be a bit, though. It's not even going to be a problem. And then you made the stakes so high, Ryan.
Cassie, I've got the multiverses in my hand. I wrote them down. So we don't have to, like, guess them all, but he went through many of them. Uh-huh. Tell me one of them, and we'll see where my next dollar or $70, I believe, is this Bible / Constitution that Trump is selling. So what's your first guess?
Oh, I don't. Does a multiverse mean like a?
And just so the audience knows, I've never met this person before, and I'm assuming that she did not watch the Invincible finale. Yes.
Yeah. Correct.
Because you're an ally, but you're not a Invincible series season fin ally. Is
it, you get it? You yeah. know what I'm about. Did he go to the Marvel?
Well, I'm gonna ask you to be more specific there.
Did he go to the snap, the snapping?
Of the video game? All right, that's one Trump Bible.
No, Ryan, did he go to the Spider-Verse?
He went to the Spider-Verse.
Fuck.
All right. That seemed so easy because I said multiverse, and there's one thing people think of, but somebody who has never played Marvel Snap before, decided to say, oh, did he go to an app on your phone? Yes, he ran into a version of Spider-Man and Dr. Octopus. All right, let's try this again.
No, Ryan, I did one.
No.
Let's call it a success.
I think that you could. I'll give you some hints. All right.
Okay.
Just think about generic sci-fi genre superhero worlds that he could be in.
Okay. Generic. Space they're already in a fair amount. They went to a video game.
Oh my god, you already guessed video game and I freaked out about it. Okay.
Wait, really? Oh,
that Marvel you forgot about that time you said Marvel Snap. Can we go to the tape? Can we listen back to that? Here's a hint. Okay.
Uh-huh.
The creator of this comic book and show is uh-huh. also the creator of a different comic book and show. His name is Robert Kirkman. And Invincible is actually his second best-selling comic. He wrote a comic that sold more and is a different show that we may or may not have just talked about.
Just talked about The Walking Dead.
He went to The Walking Dead. All right,
no
that is
way.
Two $1 for Parenthood, Planned Parenthood, and one Trump Bible. Just a couple of others, Cassie. And I'll say that because it was 2-1, the $2 should cancel out the Bible. So I'm just going to do the $2 to Planned Parenthood. He also went to Smart Dinosaur Land, where he landed in front of three raptors, and they all talked like Frasier, and it was pretty fucking great. A bunch of cavemen. There was like a cosmic Skeletor. He sat in front of Batman. And then I think one that was like Mad Max. But those were all the ones that he got punched through. And then eventually he and Angstrom Levy, while Invincible is not there, shatters in true Invincible fashion his mother's arm, like pushes the bone out of the arm, and then is about to hurt Oliver, the purple baby, before Mark gets there and takes him to a world and punches his head till he's dead. Like, kills him. And that's not something that you're supposed to do as a hero.
Oh, damn. Is this in line with the comics?
I don't remember. I mostly remember the when boys get raped in the comic books that I read, other part. But I will say that Invincible the cartoon believes that the human head holds 1 million milliliters of blood. It's crazy the amount of blood that comes out of people's heads. Even for Angstrom Levy, who has a big, giant head, so much blood. So much blood.
Is that where the episode ends?
No, there's a couple more things. He quits college, and then we get a little bit more about how Alan the alien and Omni-Man are in the same prison. Mm. And so Alan is going to, come season three, break him out. Because Omni-Man, like that whole bringing Omni-Man back and saying that, like, look, you're an abusive father and husband with a mustache. We need to forgive you. It's just such an important part of pop culture.
So important.
But yeah, that's basically where it ends. The main thing is Mark killing somebody. I do think, like, the theme, though, that took me a while to figure out, but I did figure it out before Mark's mom straight up said it. I do want that pointed out because I wrote down the minutes of, like, I figured this out at this minute, and then the show said it later.
Just to make sure in case anybody would ever come find your little notebook.
Thank you. And, I mean, like, eventually it'll be in the Smithsonian next to
of course,
Bill Cosby's sweater or whoever.
I don't – why there?
I mean, you got to put it next to something. Is that Angstrom Levy is so pissed because so many Marks and so many multiverses followed in the footsteps of their father. And why we are watching the story of the strongest Mark is because of how hard it is to not follow in those footsteps, but to be raised by your mother instead, like your human mother. And that just doesn't happen in these other worlds. So... I do think that that's interesting. And then his mom brings it up, and I was like, all right, settle down. Now you're bragging, lady, that you raised a great son. When
You're a good mom.
Yeah. And, like, then she starts embroidering it on pillows and stuff. Like, settle down.
Writing little affirmation cards to herself, putting them up on the mirror. You're a good mom. You did it.
What I do is, like, if I get super affirmative, I will sit down and write an affirmation note to myself. And if I'm not sure I should send it, I'll put it in my top drawer of my desk and I'll wait 24 hours. And then if I still want to send it the next day because I do think I need that affirmation, then I'll mail it. Wait 24 hours, you know?
That's such a good tip, Ryan. Wow. What do you think they'll do now that he's done a murder? Are they going to make him, like, now where he's down with murder, or this is just going to, it's obviously going to be a thing that really weighs on him because it's Mark,
right?
Raised by a good mother. But do you think this leads him down the path of accepting, like, some murder when necessary, or?
That's a really good question. My guess would be no. Although I read an interview this week with Robert Kirkman, the creator of the comic book, producer of the show, who said, we're so excited for season three, because now we get to deal with all these things like Mark committed murder. And I call bullshit that you don't want to deal with that. What you want to do is have the murder. That's what's fun. And then not deal with it, even though that's poor writing, but it's hard to have him deal with it. If you have him deal with the murder for the first half of season three, that's going to be boring. Finding that line is really difficult, and that's what great shows do. But that's not the exciting part. for writers mm-hmm. or audience members to be like, no, but like he has to deal with his murder. I think that Cecil and his mom and Eve, right? Because I do think that Amber's out of the picture now, but Cecil and his mom and Eve will serve as like these different sorts of angels on his shoulder. Cecil has already started saying like, you're not like your dad. You had to kill him. It's totally fine. That'll continue, and then he'll get better, and he'll realize, like, oh, I just won't kill anyone else, is my guess.
Yeah. Was there, that's obviously the biggest moment, so was there anything worth note with, like, any of the other protectors, Rexplode or anything? Anything of note with anybody else?
Not really. Like, we talked about last week, I think that so many plot lines ended. The one throwaway, but, like, minor one, I guess, C-plot, D-plot, E-plot one, was that, there was a fight where Rexplode almost died. He just got shot in the eye and the brain.
Yeah.
But didn't die.
Got shot.
The shrinking lady,
Shrinking Ray.
Ray. Good job, Rachel. Shrinking Rachel. We thought she died, but she did not. But then Duplicate did die because the guy smashed Duplicate 1 and Duplicate 2 together.
Yeah.
But Cassie, somewhere in Alaska, there was a Duplicate 0, and
that's what I'm talking about. That's math right there.
Absolute value, negative integer stock portfolio. This is what we're talking about. So Duplicate and Immortal hooked back up, and so this 16-year-old girl is once again fucking this 4,000-year-old girl. Twilight fans, take note. Maybe this is the show for you.
There's something for everyone here. Let's go to moment of the week. What was your moment of the week?
My moment of the week, I have to give it up to Mark's mom, who is doing an incredible job. We talked last week about maybe her storyline is wrapping up. After this episode, I hope not. She fights through a broken arm, and not broken like that time I fell off my bike and my arm got broken, but like bones are snapped.
Obliterated.
Yeah, like watching a boar eat a chicken wing, a buffalo wing from... Wild Wings. What's that play?
B-dubs? Buffalo Wild Wings?
Yeah, from Buffalo Wild Wings, a boar comes in and asks for an order of 12 of, like, the jalapeno kicker wings. And the server's like, is this a joke? Like, a boar walks into... And he's like, no, I would just like to eat it. But then, much like a boar, does not eat them like a gentleman. That's how her arm gets broken. but still, the only thing that she can care about is Oliver, a purple baby that she met 2 weeks ago that is the son of her disgusting ex-husband. That means you're born to be a mom, baby.
Absolutely. Overall, this was the season finale, right?
This was, yes.
Overall, how'd this season compare to the first?
I mean, I think the show keeps getting better. I think that the show keeps... I know this goes against the cast heads in the world who... think it's stupid because there's blood and maybe somebody says shit every fourth episode.
I can't have that in my sensitive ears.
They hurt Cassie's virgin ears. But no, I think that the show keeps getting, building the foundation and getting stronger and stronger.
Well, if you want to see if Ryan's correct, check it out. It's on Amazon Prime. Our last show this week was X-Men 97. On this week's episode of X-Men 97, we get two episodes in one with two different stories being told. The first story, we focus on Jubilee, who is trying to celebrate her 18th birthday, which ends up being spent stuck in Mojo's video game with Roberto. The second story is a two-parter that focuses on Storm and Forge trying to get Storm's powers back, which gets derailed when a vulture demon thing attacks them. Taste, Ryan, I ask you, what do you think is the reasoning for them giving us this unconventional split between two stories?
First of all, Storm and Forge sounds like an alt-right website that is going to take down the Capitol in like 6 months, I would say. Storm and Forge. I don't know. Like, I saw the title before I watched it, and I was like, that is strange because it says Motendo / Life Force.
Yeah, Life Force Part 1 or like Life. Yeah.
And so I thought, because I'm an idiot, so there's going to be a Motendo / Life Force Part 2.
Same.
But no, this is the Motendo part and the first part of Life Force, and we'll get the second part of Life Force later. Weird. Either some writing went wonky, or based on going through X-Taz and now Smataz, they're trying to like imitate the way that titles worked back then.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It was just so weird that it fully, like, we didn't get full credits, but we did get a whole new title card. Like, and instead of just having, like, you know, they would be, like, two stories going on that they don't connect, but you would, like, we would travel to Africa and then go back to Xavier's school. But we, like, they were like, no, this is two separate things.
It's so weird. I was trying to remember, the thing that it reminded me the most of was, do you remember when Charles and Magneto were in Savage Land?
Mm-hmm.
For, like, five episodes? But, like,
yeah.
It wasn't Savage Land the back half of the episode. It would, like you're saying, cut back and forth as mm-hmm. if it was a TV show.
Yeah. Weird. It's very weird. But let's talk about the first one with Motendo. Did you instantly know this was going to be Mojo? Because that was a delight to me when that came up.
I mean, I feel stupid now.
Yeah.
But when I saw it, I was so confused by the Motendo / Life Force Part 1 that it never occurred to me that Mojo has a video game called Motendo.
Our boy Mojo. I love that they updated it. Like, they were like, you know what? What are the kids connect with? Fucking video games now. Mojo's in the video game.
Yeah.
He's put away TV. TV's dead. It's all video games.
But importantly, not, what do they call it? With the, where you build the ladders?
Then you shoot people. Ladders?
No, not shoots and ladders. Flashpoint, or not the video games of today, but like,
yeah.
It is 1997 video games. Although,
oh, yeah.
I do have a problem here, Cassie.
Okay.
Not to be a stickler.
All you know right. how it I hate like to be a stickler. Sounds like you're going to be, though.
But it's called Motendo, which is yeah. a play on Nintendo. Yet clearly the system looks like a Sega system. And
it's
the
absolutely.
Game that's inside is the cover, like that sticking out of the top, is the cover of the X-Men Sega Genesis video game. And yet when they play the game, it's neither Nintendo nor Sega. It is the arcade game classic X-Men. So
yes,
what
Ryan,
are we doing here?
Speaking for all the nerds, preach Ryan. I'm sure everyone is up in arms. Rally them. Let's go. Storm and Forge.
I know you're making fun of me, but what you're doing is small fries because I'm the birthday Big Mac. Okay? That's all
okay.
I have to say.
All right. That was Jubilee, 18-year-old, this new Jubilee, man.
Oh, and all the fucking people at home waiting for the Jubilee countdown clock to hit to her 18th birthday. Congratulations. She is 18 years old. You fucking sickos.
When I was, they are, what this new X-Men is doing so hard is showing that everybody's powers, no matter what it was, can be cool. Fucking Cyclops can like zip around using his little lasers. He's got like little moves. And now in this episode, so they're in this game world, and there's like a hacker there who's like helping them out, giving them extra stuff. This hacker, I'll save the big spoiler, but ends up showing Jubilee that there's more she can do with her powers. And essentially she can just move with her little sparklers as well and put
right.
those in little spirals and stuff.
Or if you hold hands with another sparkler-like person, you can create, mm-hmm. get this, a giant sparkler.
But it's so powerful, and it can take down Mojo. How did you feel about them going into, like, so they fully get into this game, and we turn into the, like, 18-bit screen, or whatever, 8-bit, 16-bit, whatever the fuck.
Are you familiar with this game?
No.
Okay. God damn it. And Mike, I'm going to, just real quick, Mike is not here right now.
I know he's screaming. Give him some time.
Okay, so when we was kids, there would be a 6-player. If it was a classy arcade, there would be a 6-player X-Men video game that had like a double screen, and it was just a side scroller, which means like you would punch and kick bad guys. Probably has more to do with my Marvel fandom than anything else, is that you could be Wolverine, Cyclops, Storm, Nightcrawler, Colossus, and Cassie, of course, number 6.
Morph.
Dazzler. You could be Dazzler. incredible video game. That's what they're bringing up here. And like, this is where it starts to feel a little bit like nostalgia is falling on top of itself. We're like,
yeah,
are we in some sort of Christopher Nolan movie? But instead of like incepting into people's dreams and then dreams and then dreams, it's just like, how many levels of nostalgia could we? I mean, there's a time, I think it was last episode, where Jean Grey, it might have been Madeline Pryor, starts hitting frames off the wall. And the mm-hmm. frames she's hitting off the wall are comic book covers,
yeah.
as if they were pictures of the real X-Men team, like off the wall from 1991, 92, 93. Like, should I feel bad about this show? And like, watching it, liking it?
It toes this line for sure, because there are things that I just like. It's so fun to have it in this new atmosphere and make it more, I don't want to say edgy, but like fully like going for it in it. Like some things are so fun, and then some things it really seems like a you see what we did there. So it's definitely torn between the two. I'm still loving my time with it, though.
This was the first episode. I know that there were people that had problems with the first three in the whole, like, jerking off nostalgia onto your own tits. But
yeah,
this was the one where, like, I really felt like, oh, man, I feel dirty.
I was just hyped to see the boy Mojo back, which, honestly, this is the one. I feel like this Mojo, more tame than original Mojo.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think that he is. Also, this is woke Mojo. Wokeness has gotten into our show because he is very thin, but he's no longer the giant pile of beef that he was before. But I will point out that he's not just like svelte or built. He doesn't look like Tyler Durden. It looks like he is a couple months post Ozempic, and all of the fat is still just like it's there hanging off. And yeah. I don't know if that does the job. And then at the end, when they have to go to kill him, they're like, oh, good, he's fat again. Like, they literally bring up, oh, he's fat. He's back to fat. And now it's easier to fight him because we hate fat people.
Oh, man. They, as I mentioned, there was a hacker. It ends up being like, it doesn't fully matter. It's a version of Jubilee. So that's how she's able to teach her about her powers and how they can be more powerful.
Which made me feel gross, not only about watching this, but then also all of the Scott Pilgrim show that we watched a couple months ago. Felt like the same thing. Also, how does the new old Jubilee travel? Just like Tron. Like,
yeah,
it's just from the movie Tron.
But this is what Invincible does too, Ryan. Everybody's doing this shit.
No, there's a difference between new throw spins on tropes. Okay. I'm never going to convince you.
You never will. At the end, Jubilee does get a big old kiss because she goes for it. She initiates that kiss. How'd you feel about this, Ryan?
To a boy that's gay? I think this is something that all straight girls have to go through. Your first or your 18-year-old crush will be on a gay boy because that's the only person who has anything in common with you. But Roberto DaCosta, son, heir to the DaCosta fortune, Jubilee, you are barking up the wrong tree, baby. Can we talk real quick about, we got a little bit of Rogue and Gambit's jealousy, but so Rogue and Magneto are allegedly, as far as Gambit knows, but definitely as far as we know, hooking up. Magneto only has a couple lines in the first scene, and they are fucking corkers. They're like, hey, we should probably take a break because it's Jubilee's 18th birthday. And he's like, if Jubilee learns how to defeat villains, she will have many more birthdays to come. Just like an angry Werner Herzog, this guy. And then they're like, oh, well, okay, so somebody's parents didn't throw him birthdays. And he's like, my parents died in the Holocaust. And then just sits there and lets everybody fucking sit in that cup of tea that he just stewed.
The way this starts with Gambit trying to make Rogue coffee, and she's like, I already got it handled. And fucking Magneto sits down and he's like, it's three sugars, as he's just using his power to pull in three different spoons full of sugar. I was like, ding, we're doing it.
Gambit, would you like me to use my dick? I could use my giant wiener as well.
Then let's go to the episode.
Does Magneto even know that Gambit has a crush? Like, Magneto could be at the point where, like, he's hooking up with Rogue and has no idea that Gambit even exists or had, like, they were in love at one point.
Yeah, he probably doesn't. Honestly, he don't care about any of that shit.
The red-eyed boy seems to glare at me, and I don't notice at all.
It's a perfect Magneto you have.
Other half.
It's like, we're learning more about Forge.
Cool. Whatever young kid wants to know.
Yeah, they really dig into it.
What's fucking Forge doing?
And it's really just like this weird, like, they just really show you that these two fucking, like, hot and heavy for each other. Like, it's just a lot of flirting back and forth and, like, them, like, it's just kind of there, like, yes, we're working to fix her powers, but mainly, yes, we be fucking, is in case you were wondering.
It's a classic start to a horror movie, just without the horror act two and act three of, like, oh, are we strangers stuck in this cabin? And nothing to light or warm, nothing to light the house or warm the house but this fireplace? And there's... then, Cassie, you had to notice this.
Mm-hmm. Are you talking about on the photos on the wall? And he has his own thirst trap up of himself posted up on his wall that he looks at every day.
I'm going to take down these pictures on my wall real quick. Forge is like, all right, Storm, you want to get your powers back? There's only one thing we can do. And she's like, all right, Forge, let's ride. Forge is talking about horses, but it cuts to Storm. And her head is going up and down, going, And eventually it cuts to her on a horse. But for a solid 30 seconds, Cassie, I was like, do I check to see if anybody's home and if the doors are locked right now?
Again, this one's more adult. They don't care. They'll do whatever. this, like, that's like all that's happening in this one. Is, yes, they're fucking, yes, we're trying to get Storm's powers back. They don't get it back. They do one test. And then there's this vulture demon thing that comes at the end that they just really throw at you. I don't know. Like,
they go on their ride.
I guess I'm here for it.
They go on their very romantic beach horse ride, and then they walk in. They do their hotel key on the cabin of like, beep, no, can you try it again? Beep, no, let me try. Beep, no, I swear I will get this. You don't need to try. I will get, beep. Then it unlocks. They go into their cabin. And then these eyes come out and Forge is like, demon be gone! And Storm's like, what the fuck cabin is this?
And then the, like, the vulture demon thing takes her and it's like, I feast off of misery. Be my snack. And that's a wrap this week, fam. That's what I like to call an episode of X-Men.
Cassie, I don't know how you fit it all in, but show the audience your knuckles, because when you put your fist together, it says, I am the demon of misery, be my snack. It's fucking badass tattoo. I don't think
it's
true.
Thank you.
Well, but
it's my affirmation that I look at every day until it becomes true. since that is the end of the episode, though, let's go to moments of the week. What do you got, Ryan?
I think that I have to go with just to, like, keep referencing our other shows. Jubilee and Sunspot are trying to get out of the video game, and they're like, they go to a phone booth, and they're like, a phone booth trap, that would be creative, and then they disappear through the phone booth, I guess, referencing the Matrix, and we just saw Baby Matrix in Resident Alien. So, Matrix, you get the points tonight.
Way to go, Matrix, you earned this one. My moment of the week is when Mojo's talking about, like, he's like, you know, I'm no longer on TV, and there's like a flash of all these little TV shows or something about like the X-Men, and there's Divorce Court, but with Summers versus Gray. Fucking can't wait for that one to air. Hyped for it. This show you should be watching. Give it a shot. It's Thursdays on Disney Plus. That is it for the pool week. That for the pool list and everything that came out this week is, of course, what I mean by the pool week.
Sure.
That we all knew that. But coming up next is Estes. Welcome to S-Tasmania, bitch, a mini show within a show where we take an in-depth, episode-by-episode look at the seminal and underrated afternoon cartoon of the mid-90s, Spider-Man the Animated Series. This week we're covering Neogenic Nightmare Chapter 6. When we start off, Spidey is, of course, just swinging around, recapping to us like what the scientist is up to. And this all gets interrupted by just your classic robbery. Just a classic couple guys in a ski mask robbing a pawn shop. You love to see it.
In a city with fucking straight up supervillains.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make it easier to rob a bank because you know that, like, the Hobgoblin or whoever is over here, like, or would you get the fuck out of that city and move to, like, Des Moines and rob banks over there?
No, I like my chances of kicking it in this town being maybe too small of a fry. The police force already can't handle shit. And they're you know, they'd be off and away, and I could just, like, get all the goods.
Because, Cassie, you're a small fry, but I'm the birthday Big Mac, is what I would like to tell you.
Again, I'm
And I think that comes clear when Spider-Man jumps on the car and goes to rip out a guy, and he's like, please don't hurt me. What are you doing? Like, this is not a seasoned criminal that Spider-Man is dealing with.
I thought that I could just do this. I thought I was allowed one, at least. It does, like, you would think it'd be an easy wrap-up for Spider-Man, but he's having these weird pains from his mutating genes, and it causes big ouchies. So this doesn't go his way. He, like, gets thrown off the car. The robbers take this as a chance to take out Spider-Man and become heroes, because, again, everybody hates Spider-Man. So they're like, this is our chance. We'll now be heroes.
But then the true heroes come in, Cassie.
Spider-Man was like,
Spider-Man's like, oh, fucking police. Wow, way to
actually
go.
Actually doing something, would you look at that? They show up, they try to catch Spider-Man, he gets out of there. We then cut to Dr. Crawford, and Spider-Man has just broken into her office and is being a real asshole. He starts off just, like, stealing stuff off her desk, climbing up her walls.
Yeah, wear a ski mask, bro, if you're going to do all that shit. Can I admit something to you? We talked about her last week. I totally forgot that she was Kraven's ex-girlfriend.
Yeah, I didn't. I'm glad they made that connection for me, because I didn't at all. Shout out to this being a show for children, where they really hold your hand.
Where they're watching it week to week. I guess we are, too, but still. I was like, she seems familiar, but that's probably because I've dated so many doctors in my life. Not because I want to. They're attracted to me.
It's kind of just the vibe.
But she was, like, finally in her third appearance in this season, Neogenic Nemesis Part 6, she was like, oh, I should call my boyfriend Kraven and see if he has any advice. I was like, thank you. That's where I know you from.
That's what I needed. Yes, Spidey is the one who brings this up, because he's being, like, a little bit of an asshole at the beginning, but it seemed like normal Spider-Man. And then it really starts to ramp up, because she's like, I have this serum. It's at the moment in the test sample, it seems to be working and doing something, helping these genes not change around. But she's like, I want to run more tests. And he's like, oh, you want to run more tests? Like, you didn't do on your boyfriend that you then turned into a hunter out into the jungle? You want to do that?
Don't throw back X's in people's faces. Like, absolutely not.
It was an insane escalation. He then starts, like, grabbing stuff, throwing it.
Cassie, he's supposed to be a scientist. He smashes beakers.
Beakers?
The most important thing to a scientist is a beaker full of one color and a beaker full of another color, so you can pour those beakers into each other, and he smashes them.
That's how you know. Something's going on with this Spidey. Something ain't right.
And she says the ultimate line. May I?
Yes, please.
This is what you say to a crazed man who is getting violent. You're acting like the monster you don't want to become. Oh, man. So you're not responsible for anything, but there's a monster in your head that you don't want to become, and you're acting like exactly like that monster. You're not that monster.
It's not you. It's not you. You're fine.
You're acting like that monster that you don't want to become. Let's give all responsibility somewhere else other than the dude smashing beakers.
She's clearly been in a couple of bad relationships, because her natural response to this was like, no, 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 sweetie, this is not you. This is, look at you throwing things, lifting desks. This isn't you, my sweet, precious baby. Why don't you take this? She has an insane response of like, I know it's not you, calm down, which great there. And then she's like, you could still take this serum, though, because I could tell you kind of need this fix, so bye. I was like, two different things here.
Look, you are crazy because you want heroin. Why don't you just take this heroin?
Go ahead. I don't fully want to deal with this, so you can be on your way. He then goes, because now he has a science beaker and he broke all the ones here. He has to go to a new lab so he can test this out. And the only other lab is the school, so he heads over there. And we see Michael Morbius.
Not played by Jared Leto, so we will have to have a conversation of who did it better, this voice actor or Jared Leto.
And we will absolutely have to have that at some point.
That's definitely going to be like a couple of segments of a future show.
A future one. And we absolutely will.
Where we rank them. No, bracket. Morbius performances.
We love a bracket. But he's there, him and Felicia, and they're just talking. He's like, oh, you go to bed. I can't because I have this science thing to do. It's I eat, sleep, and breathe science. So you go get your rest, nighty-night. And he gets into the lab, which Peter thought was all to himself while he's doing his little science thingy. And he gets the ouchies while he's testing it. He's like tests a little bit on his blood instead of just taking the serum because he has a little bit of a smart moment. And during that, like, he's like, all right, this can wait till tomorrow. Morbius comes in and is like, what is this beaker that he left here in his locker? I must immediately grab it. Insane.
Your name on your beakers and that way people will not steal them.
That was the thing. He somehow also instantly knew what was happening with his beaker. Like, he knew it was, like, messing with the genes in some way. And he was like, I'm going to lose this science bet grant thing, whatever the fuck it is. I must figure out what he's been up to.
Cassie, I'm going to say straight up, based on this podcast, we know more about science than finance. And I thought we knew everything about finance. We've been giving
experts.
People so many tips tonight about buy, sell.
Diversify the portfolio.
Oh my god, always diversify.
You gotta do it between.
Unless it's not time to diversify, and then do not diversify.
Oh, the market is a little scary right now. Keep it safe, low stake.
Bear, bull, bear, bull.
Bear.
Cassie, I do have a thing here. I thought that this entire season, which is all one storyline, as you could tell, because we keep saying Neo Genesis Nightmare Part 6. Is that what we're on?
Yep.
That Morbius was always a vampire.
Yeah.
He sneaks up on Felicia Hardy like 2 minutes before what we're talking about right now. And he's like, who'd you think it was? Bela Lugosi, who played Dracula in a movie.
Mm.
I thought that he was just a vampire and we were supposed to catch on to that. Then we see his origin story right now of him becoming a vampire.
Yeah, we do. He's got a secret lab that he goes to do his dirty science, and he invites Felicia to it because he's stolen the neogenic machine and brought it to his secret lab that's hidden somewhere in the school. And, you know, there's a bat that flies around for no reason. Don't worry about it. It doesn't mean anything.
Well, we've been seeing bats all season and all series. So for there to be one here... Of course.
And Felicia's like, what the fuck is that? He's like, don't worry, it's just my vampire bat. They only eat other little vampires and smaller things, not to worry. And then, yes, he does. He starts the test on the machine. It's like his one last shot. A bat gets in the middle of it. A bat bites him, of course. And he does start to turn into a vampire.
A vampire, Michael Morbius, turns into a vampire named Michael Morbius. Cassie, I have to ask, obviously, you're in the lab late at night. I'm not going to start singing that Halloween song. And you're testing, and a laser comes down, and it turns you into you plus another animal.
Uh-huh.
What animal are you thinking about doing?
First thought, best thought, connecting to what the Earth wants for me, turtle. Pretty rad, huh?
You want to be more like a turtle?
I just want that turtle vibe, turtle life. You know how most people would be like, I want this power, like cheetah, apex predator. Like, this could be useful. This could be helpful. Not my vibe. Give me turtle.
Cassie, all you do in your life is run slowly and put your hood on when you're scared.
Yeah.
You want to be more like that.
Yeah, and I also eat lettuce very slowly. These are my top traits.
With no hands. Cassie at a salad bar is disgusting to watch.
Sizzler. I have been banned from every Sizzler in the country. They will not let me step foot in there. But thank you for asking that question, Ryan. What animal would you like to be morphed with?
Oh, man. Obviously, it would be human being. Because now... a human just like me. So now I have double the strength of me right now.
Damn.
Can you even imagine how much strength that is?
I can't even imagine, dude. You're so strong right now.
I would pick up a gallon of milk and I wouldn't even go.
Damn.
That's how fucking strong I would be. It's
fucking impressive. He starts to turn
Double
into
man.
A vampire. Double dude. He's down with being a vampire until he sees how ugly his fucking face is. Has a little bit of a freak out, but then he's also hungry, so he has to go feed. He feeds in the worst way I would have ever... I don't know who came up with this shit or why it's like this.
He goes straight to Sizzler.
Just pulls out his neck. Like, we see him, he attacks this person, and there's, like, we see them turn him over. Like, people find him, and he's got, like, all these little marks. And I assume that was, like, a bunch of little teeth marks. Like, he just went in at a lot of spots. But instead, his hand has these little sucker things. And he just kind of, like, all the little mouths on his hand, like... suck the blood. It's fucking the worst thing I've ever seen.
And so he's just putting his hand on people's faces. When we first see his first victim, what I'm thinking, because I've seen vampire lore before.
Yeah.
Michael Morbius hasn't, but I have. Like, hey, fucking Michael Morbius, open up a book by Bram Stoker instead of a science book and read how to be a vampire. You fucking straight bitch. But what he's doing is he has little suckers on his hand, and he puts them all over his face. So when we see his first victim, nothing on the neck, just holes all over his face.
All over the face.
Do you know what trypophobia is?
No.
Okay. This is a trendy phobia, like 10 years ago, 20 years ago, about fear of small little holes. Just things that have like small little holes. Does this ring a bell? And to see fucking Morbius's hole-filled palm... just stick on people's hole-filled faces. It was absolutely disgusting. Trypophobia warning, do not watch this episode if you have that completely, totally real, scientifically proven phobia.
It's, like, I truly don't know, like, the fucked up person who thought of this, and I don't know why it's like this. It's literally the worst thing I've ever fucking seen portrayed on the screen. I hate it.
Should there be vampire rules that are permanent in pop culture? He also, at some point, just goes into a house uninvited.
Uninvited. Because a lot of the lore's there. Like, a lot of the things, like the bat, you know, I don't know about garlic.
Sunlight.
And but, yeah, he does, like, he's kind of spiraling, like, and Spidey's chasing him at this point, I'm going to say. But he's getting hungry because it's been a bit since he's fed. He goes to Felicia, and Peter has also deduced that he'd probably go to Felicia because, vampires need their comfort from their booze. And, when we see Felicia, she is reading on her couch next to a painted out or a picture frame of Morbius just hanging out there.
I cannot believe how many notes I wrote down about this. So Felicia has known this dude for a week. And we know that because when they met and he first asked her out, Michael Morbius said, I'm going to take her out to dinner every night of this week, which is a crazy first move. So much so that, Cassie, I've been married to my wife for like 7 years. There's not a picture of her anywhere. To put a picture in a frame and put it on your end table is such a move.
That's like insane.
That's only shit that crazy people do.
It's like, it's... tilted the perfect way for her. If she just like looks over her shoulder, he's right there with her. Like, he's almost reading the book with her.
Oh, this poem is so romantic. I will look up. And then, of course, she hears whispers into her apartment, and when she looks out the window, whose picture is there? It's Michael fucking Morbius.
The man himself. He has come in. She's freaked out by him, as she should be. It's also like he's hungry at this time, so he's like, I gotta feed. No, never her. He's having a whole little thing going on.
I know.
And Spidey comes back during this time. They get in a little fight. He starts to go. He like bails. He was gonna attack Spider-Man because he... started to get the ouchies again during a fight. So it was like easy pickings. He was like, great, now I can feed on Spider-Man.
Right. So Morbius is desperately like a person in 2001 looking for a TV. He's like, I want plasma. And Spider-Man's like, I'm so much in pain because of my ribs, my baby ribs, my baby back ribs. And this is where Chili's TV and movie comes in. And we have a couple minutes for them to sing their song. Or Spidey has shingles. Do you know what shingles are?
Yes.
Does that, like, does that hurt the ribs?
The ribs mainly. It starts in the ribs and goes out from there.
Goes out to your roof.
Yeah.
Where shingles love to be. But yeah, so like he can, Spidey can see because of how he's attacking that, like, he's a monster, but he doesn't want to be a monster.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully I will find, there's no way for me to figure out what's going on with him unless up on this roof where shingles love to be, there's some sort of tape recorder that has literally every piece of information. Cassie, on the other shows we watch, we talk a lot about writing and structure.
Yeah.
Do we talk about this, that on this show, or do we just let Smitaz just do what it wants?
This is the most perfect writing I've ever seen this show do. Just really fixing their own things. Because throughout all of this, Morbius is a science boy, so he has been documenting everything happening into his little tape recorder.
Which you have to do if you're a scientist.
If you gotta that checks do out. It. You have to do it. And sometimes when you then, that scientist then turns into a vampire and he flies around, that tape recorder falls out of a little pocket. And Spider-Man can just play it from the exact moment he needed to get the whole story and understand.
He turns it on, it's like, I'm Michael Morbius, fast forward. I hate Peter Parker, fast forward. I'm becoming a vampire, oh no, fast forward. By the way, this is stuff that the audience all already knew.
Yeah, this is
but
so
now we have to watch Spider-Man listen to the dialogue that we had heard three scenes previous.
It's flawless. It's perfect. So he's now like, this is my boy. He's turning into something he doesn't want. I'm possibly going to face this future. I got to get to my boy. I don't know. He just goes on the hunt for him. We then cut to the doc, who is the doctor, Dr. Craven's. Craven's.
Craven is not a doctor.
Very much.
He's doing
not a
all
doctor.
Of this unlicensed. But yeah, Sabrina Carpenter.
Sabrina,
I think, is her name.
Carpenter, absolutely. We cut to her. She's still watching like what her little serum's doing on her test, and she's made the discovery that it will fully take away Peter's powers, which instead of, once she makes this discovery, instead of calling the person it would affect, Peter, she calls up her boyfriend, Craven, to tell
Craven.
Him.
On his cell phone. In Africa. On a safari.
He's like mid-hunt of a lion. Like,
ahoy, ahoy. Oh, Sabrina Carpenter, how are you? How was your tour with Taylor Swift going?
The information's getting out there, but sadly, Peter didn't get the memo because he took that serum, and we just see him
but like,
a bad
hold
time
on,
with it.
But to be clear, so Dr. Sabrina Carpenter gave Peter the serum, and she was like, this is all A-okay. And then after he clearly took way too much, she was like, oopsie poopsie.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which happens sometimes.
Look, it happens.
This freaking happens. He's like, at this point, I thought he was just going to lose his powers, but it takes a fun little turn, and he just sprouts out a bunch of arms from his ribs.
His what?
His baby back ribs.
His baby back, baby back, baby back. His arms come out of his baby back, baby back, baby back. This is another comic book storyline. I want to say it's around number 100. So this is about the time that Morbius was introduced in the comic books. I think in like the mid-70s. Great to see. There was one thing that I was surprised about with this episode is that I was hoping that he would meet a seven-boobed woman. And he would say, I wish I had seven arms. And she would say, you're doing just fine with six. Is what I was hoping would happen.
Yeah, we were all hoping for that
moment. I mean, we're all on the same page with that.
Yeah, absolutely. Collectively, we all had that. That is the end of this episode, though. So that means it's time for awards. Ryan, let's start with best web zinger. What do you got for it?
I have a question for you, Cassie. this is a trend that I've noticed, so I want you to now think about this in future episodes that you watch. I think that in the first and last minute or two, the writers are like, oh, yeah, Spidey quips. And so a lot of our awards go to the first or last 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And they're just like in the middle, we just exposition, exposition, exposition. So what I have for the zinger in this one was, oh, I have to stop these criminals unless this is one of those inner city midnight ski teams.
Mm-hmm.
When he sees the bank robbers with ski masks on.
Yeah.
Hilarious, of course. One of our generation's greatest comics is Peter Parker from the show. But again, first couple of minutes.
Yeah. Mine's also in the first couple of minutes, but I gave it to said bad guys because when they have the moment where they're like, we can now get Spider-Man, he's on the ground, he's weak, the bad guy with guns comes up and says, what's the matter with you? Are you sick? Maybe you need your shots? Because he has a gun.
Oh. So he's I thought you were doing like a vaccine joke.
No, he was going to give him a shot because he's got a gun.
You need your shots. Okay, exactly. That's pretty good.
So
we could both get 0 points if that's right. What you decide.
Great. I'm hearing from the audience now, and it does seem like, yeah, both of us get 0 for that. Let's see if we can do better with Kung Fu Grip, or best move or power. What do you got for that?
I couldn't remember the rules. And I think we've talked about this before, but like, I was wondering, is this a Spider-Man specific thing? Because I think that every time we add an action move, it's supposed to go onto his like action figure.
Yeah.
But I had to give it to Morbius, who just has no problems flying, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he doesn't, it's not like one of those invincible, like, ugh, and I'm off, but he just like floats
magically
away.
Magically floats, is so yeah. graceful at it. Such a and beautiful boy flying out that window.
And that's not from the bat. That's just from who he was before he got bit. He's just a graceful boy. But Morbius flying away, screaming, leave me alone, stay away. I connected to that so much. There's so many opportunities in my life where I wish I could just float away and not be like, ha ha ha, I'm in the air and you're not. But instead, leave me alone, stay away.
Still have a very dramatic moment, like clearly having a breakdown. Just a dramatic little boy flying off into the sky so stiffly yet beautifully.
Oh, Michael Morbius majored in drama, kindergarten through college graduation.
Yeah, he absolutely did. My best move or power is the worst thing I've ever seen on screen, which is the ability to suck plasma from somebody from your hands. God, it's god awful. So I am going to give that one to you, Ryan, because I like to respect a graceful boy. So I'm going to give you 3 points for that. Our next one is most 90s thing. What do you got for it?
Okay, so this is something I've been meaning to bring up for a while, but I'm going to do it here for this award.
Okay.
Neogenic Nemesis Part 6.
Uh-huh.
What we've seen out of the first 6 episodes, and we haven't seen the next 6 for this season, but like, couldn't this have just been the season without the parts? Like, what is stringing these together is so barely there, and we've read that they ran to add stuff like Kingpin and Smythe or whatever to the plot lines to make them all connect. They could have just been episodes and then had through lines, and that would have been rad. But instead, to do this part 1 through 12 as the entire season, that to me is so fucking 90s. When I was a kid, I went through and bought all of Maximum Carnage parts 1 through 27.
Oh, damn.
27, like, we just have to connect them or people won't buy them.
Mm.
And for some, like, you might think that, like, no kid is going to see Neogenic Nightmare Part 7 and tune in then, right? Like, that's sort of a deterrent to tune in then.
Yeah.
But there was the thing about the 90s of, like, no, everything is epic. Everything is a billion parts.
It's a marketing move, and I kind of respect it. They're like, you know what? It's just a part. Just go for it. No one's going to question it. It's fine.
It's just a part, baby.
It's just a part. For most 90s thing, I do have having a framed photo of your love interest next to you in your bed, because at this point, I've seen Extaz, and Wolverine has that beautiful moment with the frame, his frame picture. It's kind of just a thing that the people be doing in 90s cartoons.
The scene have been better if Felicia Hardy picked up the frame on her couch, looked at it, punched her claws through it, and then fucked it with her penis? Would that have been better?
That clearly, don't even need to ask that question, Ryan. Of course that would have been better. And yours seems more accurate, again, because you had the proof to back it up and everything, and I've only seen, you know, X-Men, one other show that has done this, but I'm still going to give me the points because I like it more.
And because you were born in 2016.
Yeah.
Your only attachment to the 90s is me and Mike and X-Men the Animated Series.
This is the only reference I have. Our next award is New York is a Character. What do you got for that?
I thought that was like a clear and obvious one. Mm-hmm. Until Cassie, something sparked my brain. There's a part where Peter is just hanging out and he stops for a second. This constant exposition machine stops mm-hmm. for a second because a shade is drawn. And yet you can see this two silhouettes, the two levers behind the shade, about to go at it. And Peter's like, well, I'll watch this for a second because everyone in New York has windows and they have shades that show the silhouette. So I'll watch some silhouette sex before I move on. And this is what everyone in New York is doing constantly.
They're also so packed on top of each other. Like, just, you can only see other apartment buildings. Like, what else are you going to do?
And if that shade came up, then that guy who was about to hook up with that girl would have been like, hey, fuck you, pizza face, taxi cab, get out of here. And then just shot his fucking pistols and Uzis at Peter. But yeah. The shade never came up, so you just get to watch silhouettes have sex.
And that's fine, because it's through a silhouette. For New York as a Character, I have just a classic pawn shop robbery. Just feels yeah. New York. Why not?
The poorest store in the neighborhood? Get them.
Hit them. Let's go for them.
Honorable mention, though, this is when I really feel like the Gargs came to play. He named one Bruce. Like, Spider-Man is now just fully talking to gargoyles every episode.
Oh, yeah. His therapy session, like, we had a long one with this gargoyle. Real existential crisis happening, and Bruce is helping him through it. Fucking love gargoyles, though. I'm going to give you 2 points for yours, Ryan. Final one, a chance for you to get some bonus points. Cassie, compliment. Do you got anything to compliment me?
Well, as is tradition, I will ask you to go first, so please go ahead.
You did it.
Towards the end, when Morbius is running out of steam and we're trying to decide what vampire rules we're going to play with and what we're not going to play with, the sun is about to come out and he falls to the ground. His trypophobia, disgusting holes in his hand go away.
Mm-hmm.
40 students out of nowhere run up to see what happened. And then Spider-Man says before he leaves, oh my God, he's back to normal. And what I realized watching this is that Cassie is my son. Wow. She's just a bright light that always, no matter what I'm feeling, always brings me back to normal.
Wow, that was very touching. Thank you so much. You're my best friend. I'm going to give you 2 points for that. Also did remind me, I did skip a big old portion of this, but there was just a lot of back and forth of them chasing each other. But during one of it, yeah, he does. We see the whole sun thing. He goes into the hospital, but it all ends up not fully mattering. So
no. You hit the important part where Peter puts on a dress shirt and arms rip out of it.
Yeah, that's what we really had to get to. That is it for the Webbies. I gave myself 2 points because I deserved it and I did great. Ryan, I believe you have 7 points around there at least.
Decimation. So
you clearly took this one, but you've earned it, champ. You did it. And that's Neo Genesis Nightmare Chapter 6. And that is it for this show. Please subscribe.
Do you think people at home understand that, like, our relationship is co-podcasters, but also government? You are the government-provided big brother to me, somebody who is twice your age, and you just, like, mentor me, and you're my father figure. Is uh-huh. everybody getting that at home?
I think they're getting that.
Okay.
Even though I said, like, you're my emergency contact and control of all my stuff, so well, I don't know what was really working for us here.
I feel like if you're the kind of guy who is going to be a big brother, you're going to need children to be your emergency contacts, but just the way that you called me champ is just like
fucking champ, slugger, champ. Get out there.
Wait, I'm not a champ and a slugger, am I? Hey, my goodness.
For this episode, yeah, you are, Ryan. Yeah, you are. That is it for the show, though. If you want to be a champ and a slugger, please subscribe or follow wherever you get your podcasts. You can catch every episode that we put out on YouTube. You can find us at Your Pop Filter. We also got some websites. You can go to popfilter.co, see everything that is Your Pop Filter there. That's the hub. That's where you're going to find it. Ryan recently let us all know about a very cool filter that's happening over there. You can let it know what person you want to hear, and it'll filter you and tell you they're on these episodes.
If you're the kind of person who's like, for me, Caitlin only, email us at contact@popfilter.co and let us know who you are. The Caitlin only people we want to talk to.
We have some things to say. I have some people to connect you with. I am worried. Another website you should be checking out while you're at Amazon, go ahead and switch how you're typing in shopping on Amazon. Go to popfilter.co/Amazon. That way we get a little bit of the monies. Thank you very much. We also got another show on the network. Ryan, can you tell the people about it?
Cassie, this week, 1984 has still not started. We're still in the intro. But if you listen to this week's show, you will hear the 16 shows that are going to get episodes for the 1984 season. It is the biggest season we've ever done. We have guests on every episode except for the first, so don't use that as like an indicator. But after that, we are absolutely going to crush it. You're going to be hearing it on like Time, Newsweek, News Time, Time Week.
Time for more news.
Time for news. Time for more news.com.
Eat your news now.
Eat your newsables.
All those.
All of them. All of them brought to you by cybersprout.com. .org.co. shit.
Your partner for a digital world. This season is absolutely going to pop off. You should be definitely subscribed to that one as well. We're also on social media. We're at Your Pop Filter on Instagram. We have an email, as we mentioned, contact@popfilter.co. Just send us whatever you want over there. Your opinions, your thoughts, your questions. That's where you should send them. Next week, Ryan, we have a show. It'll be coming out. And we will be discussing X-Men 97, Spider-Man 94, and the return of Caitlin.
Are we ready for that?
I don't know if the people can be ready, but you need to get ready. You have a whole week return of Caitlin. That is it for this week for Mike. I'm Ryan. For Ryan, I'm Mike. For me, I am Mia. Bye, everyone.